The next item is to convene our City Council study session for May the 5th. The first item on our agenda is to hear a presentation and discuss the East Valley Partnership business efforts relating to the city. Mr. Hutchinson and Mayor Lewis.
Can we start motion there?
No. Thank you for being with us.
We've established a good pattern here. We can start making motion.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to be here. I have a lot of memories of being in this room, most of them good. We were asked to come and present about a great project that we're working on, East Valley Partnership. And I thought, and this man needs no introduction, of course, Mayor John Lewis, who is the will be the CEO of the East Valley Partnership around mid-July. And he's been working with us since January. We've been having a great time, learn a lot of stuff. He's a great man. Sorry, I'm getting the push by a council member. So we wanted to give you an update on this project. Why Phoenix, PHX East Valley? It might be instructive to know how this started. Rock Arnett and I went out to meet with the management group of Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport to talk about updating the ULI study that was done in 2006 around the airport. And we went into the meeting, said we'd like to do that update. The group there said, "You're not thinking big enough. We need to think about the whole East Valley and doing some branding activities for the whole East Valley." So that was the genesis of this report. We were asked to go out and look at the whole East Valley and talk about branding that so that we'd have a better identification nationally of what was going on, the great assets of the East Valley. We do national marketing in this campaign. We do a lot of other things, but that's the emphasis. And we'll talk a little bit more about national marketing and how we fit in an important niche in the community. How is this initiative possible? I think it's also important to know that when we were asked to do this, we went and did some consulting work and did a lot of talking to people about the brand and how we can best identify it. And then we went out after we did that initial work and talked to about 30 partners about participating with a special, let's call it assessment, to help with this project. So Rock and Arnett and I talked to 30 folks and convinced them to work on this project. We sold it as a project that we needed 3 years to get it up and running. We're in about a year and a half of the project, coming towards the end of the second year. So we're entering the third year in the fall. So we were fortunate to get a lot of funding, a lot of participants who agreed to participate, including most of the cities and private business. So that's why it's possible. We have about a $200,000 budget to do this national marketing. The city's investment is $15,000, as I said, coupled with now 25 other committed project investors. We have a budget of about $200,000. The campaign is designed to supplement the efforts of GPEC and ACA to promote the East Valley.
Mike, real quick. So our total contribution to this is $45,000 over 3 years. Am I reading that
correct?
Right?
Yeah. So you've contributed for 2 years. We're asking for the third year, which will be the final year, and I'll talk about that a little later on, of this contribution specifically for this project.
Just to frame that, what's our annual contribution for our membership for East Valley?
$12,500.
Okay, thanks.
So PHX East Valley campaign highlights the business infrastructure, dynamic growth, and assets found in our region. And we think we're doing a good job telling that story. We supplement the efforts of GPEC and ACA. We've had close contact with them as this project was developed. Rock and I spent lots of time talking to all our partners, both in the communities and the business sector, with GPEC, with ACA, about what we're doing. So the campaign focused on elevating the East Valley, breaking news to national media, crafting the PHX East Valley centric media pitches and press release, highlighting the assets found in the region. We've hosted a media fam tour about a year ago. We're having another one in a couple of weeks where we get media people from throughout the country to come in and learn more about what's going on. And then we do cooperative marketing through national trade shows. We were asked by our partners, and we have a marketing committee that meets regularly and gives us advice, to look at whether or not we could participate in some of the trade shows that the groups are going to save a little bit of money for everyone. So we've been active in that, and we hope to do more of that. So here's the results and deliverables to date. We have, as I said, a 20-member marketing committee. Jay O'Donnell from your team has chaired. That's done a fabulous job for us. We meet regularly. We get, as I said, really good advice about the direction of the program and redirection occasionally. We have distributed a regional profile, which many of you, I think, have seen, which highlights demographics, employment, workforce, cost of doing business, education. We've developed a regional website, phxeastvalley.org, with an average of 1,200 monthly visitors. We have a public relations campaign, including familiarization tours, which I talked about. We're now implementing an online marketing campaign. We hope to grow that. We have an active presence on Facebook, Twitter, Google, LinkedIn. We have a great team, a small but active team on our organization, and so we distribute regional news and other developments through blogs and monthly newsletters. And as I said, we have presence at national trade shows that have allowed municipalities to participate at a lower pooled cost. What is the City of Mesa's return on investment? We like to talk about the multiplier effect. There's been several articles that have been written specifically about the City of Mesa. And we're talking, we show a couple of them here, some of the light rail, some of the work at Boeing. Here's the list of the two specific articles that talk about Mesa. We have a public relations consultant by the name of Labage. They're a group that is well known in the region. They're part of our budget. We hire them to do the marketing. They do good work. We ask them, and our marketing committee asks them repeatedly about what is the return, and so they have given us ideas. And when people look at this, the reaction you get is, how can it be like those big numbers? But it's the state of the art in measuring return. And we, as I said, we challenge them all the time. So here's the audience we think these two articles got and the value. We also have media pitches that we do for outreach to national media outlets to talk about things that are going on. We are currently talking about a light rail extension and the importance of that to the growth of Mesa in the East Valley. We did a promotion of the Boeing activities. We're now trying to get some more exposure to the great success at transforming the former Williams Air Force Base. And I won't dwell on the trade show interview opportunities, but when we go to trade shows, the advice we got from people like Chris Camacho is, trade shows are great, but you better have media interviews set up before you go, because that's really where you get the exposure. So our PR consultants do that. They're very good at it. So when your team and the team from Gilbert and other folks go to shows, we have arranged media meets with people who are going to hopefully tell stories. We have a familiarization tours. I talked about that. We had one a year ago. In this list, we had seven media attendees, some local, some national. The hope of the media tours, if you've been experienced with those, is that you get national stories to come out of that, and we were able to do that. Site Selector magazine did some work. Time.com talked about the STEM learning at Intel and Boeing. We had a variety of visits to facilities throughout the East Valley. I think Mayor Giles, I think you participated in that about a year ago, and we had mayors and dinners and other council members participate. Again, we're having one in the next couple of weeks. So we started online advertising. We don't have a huge budget. We have $200,000, so we're careful with it. But we started a program this year. We're spending about $4,000. We hope to grow that. We have target markets in California, the Midwest, Southwest. We think a regional return on investment, and that's links provided and clicks to the website, the standard measurement tools that you use. Some of the articles you'll see reflected on this slide. Here's some other City of Mesa articles that we've helped promote. In our campaign. We are active on social media, Facebook, Twitter, as I've said. We have a newsletter we sent out once a month, which is getting really good. We're getting great feedback from people on the newsletter. We're really fortunate to hire Chelsea Fagiano on our team about a year ago, and she is doing great things. I think she's in the audience.
Is Chelsea? Well, there she is. There right
she
there.
Where is she?
But Chelsea's here. She's fabulous and really doing good work, telling the story, moving it out, bringing us into the new millennium with regard to social media. So it's been great. We have blogs that we do. We try to cover both events, not only throughout the East Valley, and you know it's a big East Valley. There's lots going on, and we have lots of stakeholders. But I think we're doing a good job meeting the needs of everyone. Some of the additional City of Mesa exposure is we have on our website a community page where we talk about all the communities, and we give an overview, for example, on Mesa, overview demographics, economic profile, key Mesa businesses, key industries. And then the page drives traffic to the Mesa Economic Development webpage on the city's website. What's next? As I said, we're about a year and a half into this campaign. It seems a little bit longer because we had some preliminary work to develop the campaign. We had to talk a lot about the PHX East Valley brand. You guys will remember that rollout. That was a very sensitive discussion that Rock and I had with the leadership throughout the East Valley, and we came up with this brand. So what we hope to do is we're entering into the third year in the fall, and this $15,000 that you're talking about would be Mesa's contribution for the third year. We're going to upgrade the PR campaign, continue to expand that. We're going to do more online work. We're going to do more trade shows. We're working with the marketing committee and your staff and the staffs of the other East Valley cities to see what trade shows are going to go, how we can help, how we can financially participate, and then help them get media interviews. So we want to maximize increased media efforts and public relations outreach to an even broader national audience. All of EVP members, one of the things we're looking at, because when we told our partners, and we're right in the midst of going back to the 25 partners as we speak, 25 meetings, we go personally to them, and you know they say to us, you know, what's the value? Exactly the questions you're asking. And so we're telling that story, and for the third year. But our plan is to, after the third year, we won't be coming for individual assessments from the 25 initial partners. We're going to broaden the base of contributions to our total membership in the East Valley Partnership so that all our members are participating. And I think it'll be well received. We are challenged, like we should be, to prove that this is a valuable activity for our group. And I think by the end of this third year, we'll have lots of good results. So that would be over the next 18 months, we would blend that into our normal due structure. So we're a resource. We tell people, use us for things that you need. You know, I think our website is really excellent. Take advantage of our economic development profile, which I think Chelsea has some extras which you've seen. We partner with Salt River Project and Wells Fargo to produce this once a year and distribute it at our economic forum that we have in December. It's really a good document. We have lots of them. People in the community, our real estate folks, they love this information. So that's part of our campaign too. So please take advantage of that. And then connect us with on our social media and please interact with us if you have other people that you think would benefit from receiving our newsletter. Please send us the information. We'll get them on our mailing list. I'll close by thanking you for your continued support. We really think that for the $15,000 that you give, or as Councilmember Richardson said, the $45,000, we've been able to leverage in a cooperative basis with both the other cities and municipalities and Maricopa County and businesses this larger amount of money that allows us to do a real national marketing campaign. They're really expensive to do well. So this has really helped us because people have partnered together. And so that's, and when we started this, we didn't know that was where we were going to end up, frankly. But it's been really beneficial. We have great relationships with all the economic development offices in the East Valley. And we think the future, we're doing great things now, it's going to get even better. Happy to answer any questions. And
great.
Let me ask if John has any comments.
I'll let questions go first.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson.
Mike, thanks for coming in and doing this. You know, one of the things that that I was concerned about, and I think Mayor Giles and I talked a little bit about this at one point in time, is Phoenix East Valley Partnerships, really their focus on being like the GPEC of the East Valley. So I'm glad that your presentation focuses on that, because for the longest time, and I still do a little bit, feel as though you're trying to compete with all of our chambers of commerce across the East Valley, which I don't want that to take place, because I think we have, each of our communities have a wonderful chamber of commerce. They do a lot of really good things for our business community. And so to see how you've wrapped this presentation, kudos. I like it.
Great. Thank you. Other questions, comments? Mr. Richens.
I think the struggle I'm having is, you know, we give you 12.5. A lot of this stuff that you're showing, I would expect an organization like yours to do for a regular membership. And so the struggle I'm having is that I'm giving you $15,000 more on top of that. So for $27,500 a year, I get this. And I would have expected to get it for the regular membership. I'm a regular member outside the city. Okay, so I work for a company that's a member of the East Valley Partnership. I think one of our executives is on the board. And you guys have been helpful to our business. No question about it. You know, you guys have, you know, helped us with outreach and helped us with connecting during certain processes that we're dealing with. So I thank you for that. And so there's value. So I'm not saying that there's no value, but the disconnect is after 2 years of this, I'm just not sure what I'm getting a big value add for the amount of money that I'm throwing here. Because I think I could take that money and I could put it either to our Economic Development Department or the Mesa Chamber or other organizations and get similar results. And I guess you got to, you know, pay in some regards, but I don't know. I'm just not blown away by what I'm seeing, Mike.
Mayor Giles, Councilman Richens, John wants to comment, but you know, I think the issue is to get national market. We had to build up our infrastructure, and we've done that, and that took some money, and that was our first year. And so we had to go and talk to our membership about a special assessment to have that capacity.
How long has East Valley Partnership been in existence?
Since the mid-'80s.
So why did you have to build up a presence? I mean, shouldn't you be pretty well known by now?
No, Councilmember Richens, not for that, for the national marketing effort. Because there's really, the chambers do great work, but they're not doing national marketing. So it's really a niche that we talked to the economic development folks in all the cities and said, how can we help? What niche can we fill to help you do your job better? So that's why we had to build it up. And it's, our focus is national marketing. Do we do some local stuff too? Yeah, it's a great, and that's a great ad for that. So go ahead.
I'll add a few comments to Mayor Giles and council members. It's nice to be here. Not that I don't really enjoy seeing the six of you, but especially to see Councilmember Luna. How are you doing? You look great. And to Manager Brady, open doors, you just never know what's going to happen. I don't know, in a couple of years, this could be...
No.
No, we don't want Mike back.
Okay.
And you can't have Brady.
Chris, this isn't bad. This isn't bad, you know?
And we do have a man of the... I slightly go sarcastic just for a moment that when Rock came to Gilbert a couple years ago and talked about a national branding and marketing, we said, where did this come from? And once we asked a few questions, the answer was Mesa. This was at the request of the city of Mesa. And again, the sarcasm was, well, then, now actually, that was a seller for Rock, because the city of Mesa has been, for our Phoenix East Valley, the regional partner that has led the way. And a lot of the great things that have happened have been because of city of Mesa saying, what we do together. And so that was easy for us to buy in. So Gilbert has done likewise, and it was extra. The difference...
Well, John, frankly, and that's why we're putting you through the ringer a little bit.
Right.
Because we looked at all the money that we're throwing at it, and I'm looking at website impressions and a couple of stories, and...
Okay, well, let me keep going.
So what I'm hearing from you, I think, is that the promises lies in the last year and a half, because we built the infrastructure, and we've built the relationships, and now... in this, now the payoffs, time for the payoff to come, right? Is that kind of what I'm understanding?
Yes, and so you'll understand, we have these same discussions in Gilbert when it comes to regional assessments, and that could be GPECs, that could be other organizations where you're doing regional work.
And that's not the issue here, just so you know. I mean, we're proud members of the East Valley Partnership. Right. That's not the issue. The issue is the extra money on top of our regular membership, where the expectation is some of the stuff that you guys should be doing.
Right, and let me just
regular
continue.
Membership
what
should be
what you're missing. What you're missing is that East Valley Partnership is 4.5 people, and it was 3.5, and so from the mid '80s, what you've seen is some great things, and never the intent to compete with GPEC. And we have roles and responsibilities. So what you see is when the city of Mesa said we want to do this, it was national marketing. And East Valley Partnership had not done that. No one had done that. The chambers don't do it. And I'm actively involved with our Gilbert Chamber and now trying to get more involved in the other chambers. But they do such a great job locally, but no one was doing national marketing. That's the key. And so it's also hard when you do national marketing, what is the ROI? And we struggled with this name, and then it became Phoenix East Valley, and so that is the brand that is going out that was not a brand that even existed a couple of years ago. And it will be hard sometimes to know 3 years, 4 years, 5 years if that branding really worked, but I can say that now coming in where 2 years ago I said, what is this rock, that I have seen firsthand the type of things going on that did not happened before. And so the national marketing is definitely something that I have seen as a great benefit to the Phoenix East Valley. Now, the question of why weren't we doing it before, you know, that is something that possibly you could add more staff in the past, add more dues, but this was City of Mesa driven.
Really, former Mayor Smith was interested in getting a better identifier for the East Valley.
And there was an opposition going down that road. It's just, I'm just looking at what we've done so far, and I'm going, really? Is this it? But so what I'm hearing from you is that the next year and a half, we built the infrastructure, the next year and a half is the big deal. So, I mean, let's go forward with it. That's fine. And so we're just expecting great things over the next year and a half of this campaign. And we'll be watching it very closely, you know. And your ability to deliver on it is, I think, is going to be really important. And John, you're exactly right, Mayor. You know, sometimes you don't know the full effects of the marketing efforts that you do. I get that. But you know, if you come to the cities again for special assessments, people are going to judge those future assessments against the results of what we're going to get here. So that's all that I'm saying. You know, I'm not trying to be critical of it. And you know, we're buying into the whole idea of it. So it's the results that you get for the money that you spend is what we have to scrutinize. I mean, we're accountable for the funding that we have. So
absolutely.
I don't mean to dominate the conversation.
Let me just add one more thought.
You know what? Actually, we've got three monster items on our agenda today. Thank you very much for your presentation. It's been great. We appreciate the great work. We're excited to be part of this great regional activity. If you want to give a quick wrap up.
Well, I was looking at the talent growth opportunity. You know, our job is to sell the assets of the East Valley, and we got great talent. We're continuing to grow, and there's lots of opportunities. And that's the story. We talk about the great assets in the East Valley, including Arizona State, who I understand is on your agenda, and our educational community. So it's great. I just wanted to welcome back Councilmember Luna, a great guy, a great community leader. We're glad you're here. Dave.
Thank you very much. And that was an oversight. I had a nice chat with Councilmember Luna, gave him a big hug before the meeting started, but I should have. I was neglectful in not welcoming back Councilmember Luna. Dave, I think you know how welcome we are and how excited we are to have you back, and you're looking great. We couldn't be more pleased. And I know I speak for everybody in the room. Yeah, we've missed you, and you've been in our thoughts and prayers, so it's very good to see you here. Thank you, gentlemen. A great presentation. Next item on our agenda is to hear a presentation and discuss an update on the higher education initiative. I think we're going to start with Andrew. Thank you. We'll invite our friends from ASU to come forward. Rick Neymark and Angela Creedon, thank you very much for being here. We're excited to get an update and hear your presentation.
Mayor, council members, Mr. Brady. This is on. You can hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for inviting us to join you here this morning. First of all, I would like to say how excited ASU is to be a part of this process. You invited us into the fold. This is your vision for your community, and your support of higher education is really unprecedented. So we deeply appreciate the fact that you would even invite us into your community to consider an opportunity. As we move forward, we are very hopeful that the vision that we've established jointly will actually come to fruition, and we have some exciting programs that we can offer to you today. So we're going to get into a little bit more detail than perhaps we were able to do in the past. I do want to let you know that we have worked really, really hard over the last few months to ensure that the programs that we're going to bring to Mesa are not only complementary to ASU, to the downtown area, but are also complementary to our other higher education institutions that are located here in Mesa. So we did a very thorough evaluation of all the programs presently being offered. We made sure that anything that we're doing would not be competitive in any nature and would just simply be complementary. We have a number of opportunities, and I had the opportunity this morning, thank you, Mayor, to introduce me to Charlie from Benedictine. We're excited about partnering with Benedictine and looking at ways that we can jointly work together, whether it's on student life, student housing, whatever the case may be. We're really excited to partner with them. We know that they'll be fabulous partners. We have a history of working collaboratively with other private institutions, faith-based organizations. Our partnership in Tempe with University of Mary is just one example. So we're really excited about continuing those conversations. As we launch into a kind of an overview of the programs that we hope to offer in Mesa, I do want to let you know that President Crow could not be more excited about this opportunity. With all that Mesa has done, how visionary you have been in your support of our higher education, recognizing as a state we need to graduate more students to join our workforce, to support our economic development efforts. He was very, very engaged in the process of helping us figure out exactly what type of programs we would be offering here. So on behalf of President Crow, I share with you his excitement for this. We are happy to be part of your story. We're excited to be a part of your story. And we know that this is going to be something that will live beyond all of us sitting here in this room. Should you choose to allow ASU to join you in the downtown, we believe that we can be a strong partner in the community. We have an established reputation as being taking our commitment to public education very, very seriously. I laughed when I heard Mike Hutchinson earlier say, my friend Mike, that East Valley Partnership was challenged with not thinking big enough. I can assure you, President Crow always thinks big. So we're thinking big for Mesa, I can assure you of that. We'll go ahead and kick off with Rick Neymark's going to talk a little bit about the programs. I know that some of you have talked a little bit about the Sun Devil being in the details. And so you will get a few more of those details today.
That was Mr. Yes, Finter. Councilman. Mr. Finter gets the credit for that hashtag. Yeah, thank you.
So you'll get a few more of those Sun Devil details. But I do want to say that we already have a presence in Mesa, our Polytechnic campus, with Councilmember Thompson. You've been such a huge supporter of ours. You know we have a very large vision at the Polytechnic campus, and with your help, we're going to accomplish the goals we have for that campus as well. Nothing we're doing in downtown Mesa will keep us from setting our sights on establishing that campus and growing that enrollment is there as well. So we're excited to launch into a few more details for you, and we'll get started.
Good morning, Mayor, members of the council. I'm glad to be back today. And last time we were here, we really hadn't had a chance internally to put together what we think is, from our perspective, a very good mix of programs that fit both what the community can benefit from and what we can help make successful, because that's the most important thing. If we have programs that we bring here at your request, we want to make sure that they continue on, as Angela said, long past our time. So we have a very interesting mix of things, and we've sort of grouped them into some key categories. And I'll say it's a very fluid set of categories, and you'll notice my circles on the map, on the chart, overlap. And there's a reason for that, because there are a lot of overlaps and interactions between the different programs that we're discussing today. As part of our dialogue and coming up with an intergovernmental agreement, we do intend to call out some of these programs very specifically, and others, you know, will continue to evolve over time. There are programs that are in downtown Phoenix that were not anticipated when we started with Phoenix, and we want to be that same kind of long-term, nimble thinkers about the future, because there are programs that, some of which we're going to talk about today, that don't even exist at ASU yet. They're new things that we are interested in bringing and growing. And also, many of these programs that do exist will benefit from a location in downtown Mesa, either because it's more accessible to some students, or in some cases, it's the right environment to launch them into big, more nationally recognized programs. So we are really excited about the opportunity to be here and talk about these programs. Before I launch in, I'm going to talk about each subject matter, so don't worry if you can't read that slide. But I do want to talk about just two things which are on the left, which is a gray box, and it's not specifically a matter with which we would necessarily put in the intergovernmental agreement. But we have two areas that we do intend to pursue if these other programs start to move in Mesa. And one is ASU Prep Academy. That's the top gray box there. You may know that we have an active K through high school education program, a preparatory academy, which helps prepare students for college success. And the track record is outstanding, both in our downtown Phoenix campus and in our Polytechnic campus locations. And we have an interest in working with your community and working with the school district to create another ASU Prep Academy closer to the city center here, if that's something that you and the school district want to partner on, because we think that will help continue to grow access to education and success in college for everybody. Secondly, we think downtown Mesa is a really exciting place for housing. We're not asking you to build housing for us. That didn't happen in downtown Phoenix either. But if we bring a significant number of students here, it's going to open up a real possibility that housing developers, with whom we work regularly in the student housing world, or even just private developers who want to take advantage of the numbers of students that we intend to bring down here, that also, we hope, will be an important part of this, and particularly for families, for graduate students, for faculty. This, you know, there's no good concentrations of housing along the light rail where faculty and grad students and students with families have the opportunity to live and be able to, you know, go back and forth to the various campuses that are on the light rail. So we think this is a really exciting opportunity also, but we're not asking that you in any way fund that unless there's some particular ideas that you have as a part of that. So I just wanted to talk about those two elements before I talk about the programs themselves. So let's jump in. One key area that we see is really important, and particularly with your investment in the Mesa Arts Center, and just what city centers are all about, is a performing and media arts zone. And what do we mean by that? Well, we have several programs at the Herberger Institute, which is the Institute for Design and the Arts at ASU, a very successful institute. We have a fairly new dean who has a vision of not just keeping everything on the Tempe campus, but expanding and embedding our arts programs in various places throughout the region. And one of those exciting places is the Mesa City Center next to the Mesa Arts Center. And so the kinds of programs that we believe could be here and be successful are film and media production, music performance, arts, media, and engineering, which is a really interesting sort of digital media program that's both in the arts and elsewhere. And then some of our dance programs. So I'm just going to click through and show you examples. So you are likely to see, if we do this, you're likely to see students filming films, screenings of student films. This could happen here in your plaza or in, you know, into or next to one of our buildings. And this is on the ASU campus now. Performing arts groups, both rehearsing and performing in performance spaces here. This is actually a clip from our arts meeting in engineering. It looks a little unusual to me, and I don't know what this person is doing. But there's a lot of creative and experimental art activity going on that could be really interesting and, again, can leverage our relationship with the Mesa Arts Center. And then I mentioned dance as well. So those are the programs in the arts that we are very specifically targeting for expansion to, in some cases, relocation to, completely relocation to, or just creating new outlets for those programs. And that, all these are very significant presences and a big part of what we hope to bring here. A second area we call gaming and sensory technology. It sounds very confusing, and it might be video games or whatever. What we're talking about here is applied sensory technology, human-computer interaction, smart building research, and then gaming. And let me just talk to you about the kinds of programs we're talking about. So here's somebody interacting with video work, and human-computer interaction is definitely a cutting-edge area of research at our university, although frankly, we have a lot of growth to do in that area. Similarly, smart building research. We have some excellent researchers on sort of trying to figure out how buildings can be highly enabled to react to occupants and to provide data to people who use buildings. And we see a center here in Mesa where we can grow our strength in this area in a big way and recruit some amazing researchers and faculty, and also some teaching programs in this area as well. So one of the ideas we have is to make one of the smartest buildings in the nation be here. And by the way, in the way we work with cities, we're always responsible for the tenant improvements. And so that would be, you know, the highly enabled stuff you're not going to be responsible for. You just need to get us good electricity and Wi-Fi and those kinds of things. So human-computer interaction and gaming. So this is an area that ASU has some points of strength. But when we started talking about this internally, President Crow and others got really excited about it because this is really a way for the future. And I'm not really talking about video game design or people, you know, playing with video games, although that's also an element of it. What I'm really talking about is using digital technology, using gaming for creating new ways of educating people, gaming for rehabilitation, physical and mental rehabilitation, those kinds of things. The application of gaming and digital technology is a huge growth area for us, and we want to create a center of excellence. And we think this opportunity here in downtown Mesa could be an opportunity that would be really exciting, and people would be excited to come here, and we can recruit some great people. So, you know, here's a photo of a guy working with VR and other people interacting. And it just gives you a sense of the potential in this area. And then early childhood education and research is also something that we have some strength in, but we want to grow our strength. And I know education is a strong value in this community. And early childhood education is particularly important, getting kids ready and prepared to learn. That's what the job is of people in the early childhood area. That's part of our pipeline, so we care about it. But more importantly, we have the opportunity to really do some cutting-edge research and try to do some cutting-edge activity in this area and train people to be the best they can be. And here's an example of some kids in our current programs in Tempe learning how to interact with a robot or learning about science and at the preschool stage.
I'm sorry, Mr. Luna?
That's a real quick question on that. As you know, that we are heading a early childhood education task force. Would you be including some kind of lab where you would actually have early pre-K students there working with some of your teachers?
I think that's a very likely scenario, yes. We are interested because you can't learn how to teach kids better and how to try new techniques without actually having the kids around. So either that will happen here, or if you don't want it to happen here, it can happen in Tempe. But it seems like this makes sense as a location for something like that. We really view this, and I've said before, we're very interested in professional education here. And we're talking about a lot of different things, various specialized master's degree programs, the Global Launch Program, which is a language program. We bring people in from all over the world to teach them English so that they can have the pathway to college success. And ASU, if you don't know, is number one in the nation in international students. So we're number one in a lot of things because we're big, but we're very proud of that. And our Global Launch Program is a big part of that. We also want to teach other languages to English-speaking students. So we're excited about that. Professional certifications, there's a whole bunch of opportunities to partner. You were talking earlier about the business community, and you know, Mesa's got great businesses. The East Valley broadly has great businesses, and we want to work with them to help their employees get better at what they do. And then lifelong learning is also a very strong interest of ours. And the reason for that, we are one of the Osher lifelong learning sites. It's a program sponsored by the Osher Foundation. We have hundreds of people in both Tempe and in downtown Phoenix coming from all over to classes. And these are mostly during the day. They're people that are mostly my age or older coming to continue their learning journey. And so we don't want to just talk about, you know, 20-year-olds or 25-year-olds or 30-year-olds. We want to continue to be a partner in educating the broader community. And the possibilities here are amazing because we don't have anything really east of Tempe in this area. So one of the areas, specific areas we're discussing is we have a online currently master's degree in Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Our people want to do an in-person cohort or two of that and have a regular ongoing training for firefighters, police officers, and other folks who are engaged in Homeland Security and Emergency Management. There are a couple other programs in that area, too, in the leadership of emergency management. And we just see that as a tremendous opportunity here if you're interested in it. We could launch it somewhere else, but we think this is a good place to launch that particular in-person program. And it's been a huge growth program for us already. Another area that we have some interest in is, I mentioned professional certifications and enhancing for professionals. We have a business analytics program in the W.P. Carey School, and they have some interest in doing in-person cohorts in Mesa. And these are just some examples of the master's programs or the certification programs that we'd like to bring into this in addition to the lifelong learning. There are many others that are on the list, but I'm not going to go through everything today. And then at the center of all this is something we're calling our Creativity and Commerce Core. And it really overlaps with all of these elements. One of the things we want to do as a university is not just to educate people, but to impact the economy and take that education and turn it into job opportunities, commercialization opportunities, et cetera. And as you know, we do that in several places. So we have great success at Sky Song. We have some things going on in downtown Tempe, at the Poly campus. We have a center in Chandler that we're working with. But downtown Mesa, the city center of Mesa, again, is a great opportunity to do this. And we heard from some of those young entrepreneurs last time I was here or two times ago about their interest and everything they're doing. And we want to work with them to create this space. So we're talking about a couple of things, a digital maker and create space. So I'm not talking about physical maker spaces where you're sawing lumber and, you know, doing you know, putting together plastic or whatever. We're talking an electronic and digital maker space that is really focused on the kinds of programs I talked about before, human-computer interaction, gaming for rehab or gaming for education or other gaming development, and have a space where everybody can come together and that the community can use in addition to our students. Added to that, we have a great strength in entrepreneurship support, and we want to do that. We want a place where people can showcase their ideas, where students can start their companies, and it's really hard. We have a lot of students in Tempe who have company startup ideas, and they don't have any place to go, and we think this is a great opportunity for startup spaces for students and young alumni. And then I think you know about LaunchPoint, which is at the Poly campus, and I think all of us involved with that think that this would be a better, more successful location for LaunchPoint. So let me just show you some pictures. These are obviously not ASU things because we don't have this yet. But this is a digital makerspace in San Francisco, and it's a very small one. We anticipate something much larger, but it just shows you the kind of session. And then this is the entrepreneurship support space where students can not only get help and support and sort of nurture one another and co-work, but also have their own storefronts for their new business, put up their logo and start, because this is all about growing education and growing an economy. So I just put up some of the logos of some of the colleges that are going to have a presence here if this goes forward, and we are just super excited about doing this. Our anticipation in terms of numbers of students is around 2,500. We may start a little smaller than that and grow our way over time to that, just like we have in Phoenix. And by the way, downtown Phoenix, I think, has been one of our fastest growing campuses because of the newness and the ability to sort of tailor spaces to the community itself. And that's what we want to do here. We want to design something, both physically and what happens inside, that will complement and help grow your community. By the way, one example of that, we were talking the other day about how I live in downtown Phoenix, and I walk by the opera rehearsal building a lot. And you can see into that building and watch the opera singers doing their thing. As we talk about buildings and building design down here, I think the opportunity for people to see in and connect to the creative activities that are going on is also going to be just a tremendously interesting opportunity for people who just want to be in the city center here. So with that, happy to try to answer any questions. Mr. Brady and I are working hard on the business side of this, and we'll be back when in a couple of weeks, Chris, to try to sort of lay out all of that, because obviously it's a collaboration that involves both of us doing things, and so we're working on that very feverishly.
Great. Thank you, Rick and Angela. There's other parts to this presentation. I know there's, for example, there's some new renderings of the buildings that are complement the discussion that you just led us through. I don't know if it'd be better to hear from those folks, but Council, if you have questions now that you'd like to ask of ASU, I don't mean to keep you from doing that. But if not, why don't we go ahead and Mr. Brady, do you have anything you want to add before we invite the planners up?
No, I think, Mayor, I think what I appreciate Angela and Rick being here. What Rick suggested is what we would like to do. We've been working with City Attorney's Office in about 2 weeks, come back to Council with a pretty substantial outline of the IGA, excuse me, because we'll need to get that in line pretty quickly. I think the other item that we've kind of been taking this step at a time, you know, after you see the programming and if that's something that we're interested in, we'll be including those elements as a commitment to include it in the IGA, that those are the types, some of these are the programs that we would specifically call out in the IGA to be placed here in Mesa. In addition to that, we'll then be getting into the commitment of the facilities and how much of the building sizes we'd have to commit to. And then I would like Council in 2 weeks' time also to at least present to Council at least some options that we would consider for financing, and how would you finance facilities of this nature and how we go forward. I'd also like, I'm hoping also in 2 weeks, that we can also outline and bring forward the other improvements outside of the ASU commitment for other high-risk education institutions and what we would be proposing to include in the entire package that we know today. So those would be things that we would like to present or bring back to the council in about 2 weeks.
Great. There's a lot to discuss there, and I'm anxious for us to thoroughly discuss all of that. But just so that we have the bigger context, why don't we thank you. Stick around. We might have some questions for you.
I do have a quick question.
Please. Yes.
We're talking a lot about what's going to happen on the inside. Before we look at the outside, you made a statement in your presentation that you would be responsible for tenant improvements. Can you describe a little bit about what that looks like? There's a lot of ways that you could do tenant improvements. You have, you know, I've learned a little bit about the commercial leasing industry, not a lot, but, you know, you have buildings that are provided in gray shell and vanilla shell and all these different things. You know, some of them are more complete than others. So what's ASU's vision? And you know, I get that the programming brings a lot of skin in the game for you, but, you know, from a financial side, I'm kind of curious to what you meant by that.
Generally, what we've done in other communities is the community has provided us with a building that we don't have, you know, we touch it all the way along, but the community is really responsible for the procurement of architecture and engineering and all that through state law. And we work in collaboration with the community to talk about design and those kinds of things. And then basically what is delivered is a basic shell building that then we would, that can operate with electricity and HVAC and all the things that a building needs to get a C of O. But we would then put in all the TIs, so the, any improvements we need for classrooms, any equipment, furnishings, what a standard FF&E package, basically.
But we would most likely, the walls would be there, they'd be painted, it would have carpet, have tile, so they would bring everything else in, FF&E.
Right. You might leave your quarter for not defining what FF&E is.
Fixture, furniture, and equipment.
Sorry. Me too. I'm sorry about that. Yeah, but some of these buildings, I will say, will require some very highly specialized stuff, and particularly the digital and the smart building things. And we're not expecting you to pay for those kinds of upgrades. The only thing that would be different, but we're not recommending that here, is something like a lab building. Obviously, that has a lot of sort of structural things that would increase the cost of a physical building. And we do have lab buildings in our other campus, but we're not doing wet lab research down here. So most of the buildings will be basic in terms of their bones, if you will, and in terms of classrooms and performance spaces and those kinds of things.
Thank you. Mr. Luna and then Mr. Thompson.
I think Mr. Brady answered the question. So you're going to be responsible for all the technology that actually goes in the building as we talk about gaming. We will be responsible for the fiber, the that kind of infrastructure. Is that correct? Going into the building?
I think we would have the fiber available at the buildings, like we would in a public right-of-way, and then they would connect to it. I think we already have, I believe we have quite a bit of that in the front of the buildings in downtown already. So,
thank you.
One of the things that that I'm very interested in, and thank you for bringing this in now, is I think this is a little, I wish this would have been last week versus this week. I know this is very fluid and it can change as we in the city talk amongst all of ourselves to find out what programming we feel would work here. But one of the things I'm interested in is the launch point piece, because I know other than the location, really, of Lodge Point, why it hasn't been such a screaming success is, in my opinion, there needs to be the ability for the entrepreneur or the student to actually build the widget that he's designing, he or she is designing. And, you know, that's something that, you know, as an engineer that I went through when I did my senior design project, and, you know, we had to actually manufacture or build our widget. And I think that's something missing. Now, on the digital screen, I get it. You know, it's more about your computers and mainframes and so forth, servers, what have you. But, you know, on the engineering application, it's I think sometimes it's tough to see how your parts and pieces are going to fit together unless you're able to build it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, CAD can only take you so far, but hands-on speaks a lot. And so I hope that as we look at developing this entrepreneur center, that it does become more of the wet design, or the, you know, where you're actually getting hands-on, the person's actually has the ability to build the widget, mm-hmm. you know, from the ground up. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mr. Cavanaugh, Mr. Finter.
Mayor, may I respond real quickly to
yes,
Mr.
Thank
Tom?
You.
I just want to add one key element. The university has recently hired someone who is focusing entirely on entrepreneurship. She is a rock star. I mean, a rock star in this world. So she has evaluated LaunchPoint. She's gone and evaluated all the other sites where we're engaged in entrepreneurship. You will be unbelievably impressed with what she can produce there.
I just have three comments. I appreciate the introductory comments about the potential for collaboration with student and faculty housing, because I think it presents a very unique opportunity for partnership with all the other institutions of higher education in downtown Mesa. We have many of them that I think would also agree with you that there are similar needs in terms of housing for faculty, for staff, for students with families and things like that. And I think that it offers a great opportunity for collaboration for those services that ends up strengthening all of them at the same time. The second point I'd like to make is with the issue of the performing arts programs that you're talking about bringing here, I think it's a perfect complement to Mesa Community College, which has one of the largest performing arts programs in America of any community college, and I think that's a great complement, a segue partnership, really, for students who are working at Mesa, who are studying at Mesa Community College, and to be able to easily transition to move on to a nearby campus. And finally, the Gaming Sensory Institute, if those of us who look at economics and education around the country understand that something of this specialized and concentrated nature isn't available here in the state. And yet this is something that is one of the hottest items in both economic development and education around the country that students who are in high school now are looking to do. Students who are in college now are looking to do. And so, again, I think that is something that would certainly be a draw for students, for faculty, and also will be a very interesting asset for businesses looking to locate here to partner with the university in helping develop those programs. So I appreciate the work being done, particularly in those three areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Finter.
Wonderful. Excuse me.
Thank you. I'll add in what the Vice Mayor was just saying. He covered some of it. Under the Sensory Technology Institute, I had the chance to read this last night, this presentation, and woke up early to CNBC, and they had quite a segment about where the big global money is, excuse me, for the future, where the big investment dollars, the research dollars, and it is exactly in this area. Quite exciting when you talk about cutting edge. This would put us at the cutting edge, and I know you know that, so really excited. That stands out to me as an area that could really separate this or really give distinction to this campus and others. So looking forward to more details along those lines.
Thank you. Mr. Luna.
Just real quick, I really appreciate the whole teacher college bringing them over to Mesa. You know, Mesa Public Schools is the largest school district here in the state of Arizona. Having that partnership with the teacher college would certainly be something that's going to be beneficial. I know that my peers at Mesa Public Schools found out about ASU, they were quite effusive about the fact that we were going to have this. And we have this opportunity. It's going to be quite exciting for our community. So,
thank you.
Thank you. I was going to hold my comments about the programs because, frankly, I'm so excited to look at the buildings. But given that my colleagues have weighed in, I think we've all kind of had our fingers crossed and we're holding our breath to see, okay, what is ASU going to bring us? Is this something that is going to resonate with our community or not? And I can't tell you how grateful I am because you've really given us something that I don't see how anyone is going to be able to find fault with or be anything but very excited about the programs that you're talking about. So the very great programs, a very elite university. I have to say thank you. During my time as mayor and maybe particularly in my previous council experience, I've had the opportunity to talk with people who were wanting to bring big projects to Mesa. And on those occasions, I've always been somewhat disappointed because they were focused on their agenda and not on the city of Mesa's agenda. And that's been the opposite experience in working with ASU. The couple of times that I've had the opportunity to talk with them and explore these programs, they've always made clear that what they wanted what was best for the community. And they were looking to bring things here that would be complementary and that would promote our goals and our agenda. And that I found that remarkably refreshing. So thank you for just the attitude that you brought to the conversation that we've had about this. I love the focus. This is a very Mesa-centric focus. You talk about things like arts on our arts campus. I mean, that's fabulous. That's going to make what's something that's already very good even better. The innovation and entrepreneurship, the STEM-type programs, the economic development spinoff of that is going to be tremendous. The startups that will come from that, I think, are going to have a ripple effect, and we're going to have some of the smartest young people in the state are going to be hanging out in downtown Mesa, and they're going to be starting their careers here and starting their businesses here. So I think it's just terribly exciting to think about where that's going to lead us. And then finally, I really appreciate the emphasis on education. The idea that we're going to have a campus here where we're sitting that takes people of Mesa all the way from the early childhood to pre-K experience all the way through the postdoctorate experience is amazing. That will just really put into concrete this whole vision and core principle that we have as a community of focusing on education. So I think it couldn't be a better fit for the city of Mesa. So thank you for the hard work that you put into giving us what I think is exactly what we were hoping to get. Having said that, I'm anxious to see the buildings. So please hang out. We might have some more questions for you, but we'll invite up now the folks from Colwell Scheller West 8 and Weddle Gilmore to talk about. And Jeff, are you going to kick this off for us?
Yes, Mayor.
Morning, Mayor, Council. As it should be, form follows function. And now that we've had a nice discussion of function, I'd like to introduce Phil Weddle, who has been working for the past couple weeks trying to take what we originally presented a few weeks ago as a very conceptual design. They've put a lot of work into refining that design, and hopefully we'll be able to present something that gives the council a nice wow factor. Bill?
Thanks, Jeff. Mayor Giles and members of council, it's a pleasure to be here this morning to give you an update on the planning and design for the Mesa City Center and the ASU campus in downtown Mesa. As we've discussed in the past presentation, I think we are strong believers that this project has the potential to play a very transformational role in downtown Mesa, bring significant economic and social benefit to downtown. Just as a quick orientation, the analysis diagram here, Main Street just below the City Hall and Center Street just to the left of that. So the center block is the one we'll be focusing our primary discussion on. The blue areas designate the areas that are city-held property. Our design process begins with the idea of creating a kind of central urban plaza that would be the anchor for the ASU campus in downtown Mesa. So this diagram just highlights our proposal for how that's organized. We have the blue area to the bottom, which we call the lower terrace. That includes the City Hall and the main central plaza space. And then the gray area to the north, we call the upper terrace, and that includes the balance of the buildings on the site. The gold axes are the connections to the south, to the Mesa Arts Center, and to the north, to the Convention Center, and then east and west along the Pepper Place alignment. The pink line designates the transition between those zones, which we are developing a promenade that will be a prominent feature in the civic space. The integration of the ASU programs into the site, we have proposed three new buildings. And those are buildings A, B, and C, in addition to an adaptive reuse of the existing building on the northeast corner of the site, which is currently the IT building. These combine for a little over 200,000 square feet that could be phased in over time. But I think the buildings A and B are planned to be five-story structures, and building C, a four-story structure, and then D is an existing two-story structure. On each of these, on buildings A and B, I should say, we are intending, at least in the initial planning, that the ground level would also have space for restaurant and commercial lease space on the ground level. So the two square footage numbers that you see on there, one is the total square footage, and then the number to the right is the amount that's allocated for ASU in that program. And a conceptual master plan for the site, again, trying to create a civic plaza that becomes the heart of the campus, becomes a space not only for day-to-day activation, but a place for community celebrations and events. There are several opportunities we've been looking at for potential future commercial development on the site as well. Those are not part of this project, but we certainly want to plan and make ready for those so that there's opportunity to have additional restaurants or office spaces that could be developed on the site, which we think will be important for the kind of activation and also creates additional economic benefit for the development.
I'm sorry, Phil, before you go on, that you were mentioning the potential for some commercial buildings on this campus, and those are depicted in the diagram that you're showing us. Is that right, or an outline of those buildings?
Mayor Giles, they are. There's one just to the north of City Hall, which is just a dashed line there, and then also on the east side of the site along Centennial Way, there's a dashed line there. Those are intended as future development opportunities. We didn't include them as solid buildings at the moment because they're not part of the kind of project at hand, but certainly something that we want to plan for and we think has a tremendous benefit for this project.
Thank you.
And then some of the visualizations. This is building A, which is the building that's on Main Street on the Mesa Arts Center side of Main Street, so the south side of Main. And the idea of creating a building that has a very kind of strong connection to Main Street tries to really activate Main Street through both the programming as well as the architectural design. I think the thought here is that this would be a great place for some of the performing arts programs that we've talked about and the ability to have transparency there so that people can see some of the performing arts programming that's going on, and the ability for that to connect to the Mesa Arts Center seems like a very natural connection to us, and we think creates a very iconic start for ASU in downtown Mesa. Again, the ground level, we've looked at opportunities for that to be a mixed use, so there's opportunity to create restaurants and other commercial retail space at the ground level so that we're reinforcing the activation of Main Street and the opportunity to create a restaurant that could also serve the crowds that come to Mesa Arts Center and other events that are happening in downtown. We think that that's a very complementary function to the ASU program. That same building, and this is from the heart of the plaza looking south towards Main Street, but you can see the idea of trying to create kind of a green heart to the center of the city center site. That really becomes a shady place, a place that people will want to gather. And then a view looking to the north, this would be buildings B and C. Building B is the larger building that's in the foreground. And then we have City Hall to our left. The intent would be to develop a shade promenade around the City Hall to really try and create a stronger connection between City Hall and the plaza. We're imagining that there would be water features, a splash pad or other types of water features in the plaza, again, just to kind of support activation and try and create a cooler environment. The main building B, we think, is a really important building in its the way that it engages with the plaza. We've elevated the portion of the building on the west so that there's a covered terrace space below that, and you can actually see the city council chambers beyond that. We think, and we've also created a roof terrace on that building that overlooks the main plaza. And the idea that sunscreen that you see there on the west side of the building could also be a projection space for evening programming. And so, again, if this were a built facility that were tied into the digital media program, it could be that you're showing student films there, or you could be doing film festivals, you could be doing movies in the park. It really becomes a place for the community to come together, so it's not only serving the ASU program, it's serving the broader community in the role that it plays in creating a great plaza space. And then lastly, and not nearly as exciting, if we could talk about parking. I know that was an issue that was brought up in our previous meeting. We are proposing in this concept to remove the vast majority of the surface parking lot that exists on this site today. There are approximately 500 parking spaces on this block currently. And our plan, we've looked at kind of a multi-prong approach where we are creating new surface parking on street and also on site along the north west and north east edges of the site. Together, those are creating just over 250 parking spaces on site for convenience parking for public. And then in addition, we are looking to supplement with structured parking, and we're looking at several different strategies. One is the opportunity to lease existing parking structure space, in particular the old Brown & Brown garage as an option that has a little over 1,100 spaces available. And then we're also looking at the opportunity to create new structured parking. And we've looked at underground structured parking that could exist on site. We have in this plan shown a potential for a little over 300 spaces on site in a below grade structure. And then we've also looked at opportunities within a close walk, a 3 to 4 minute walk from this site to find other opportunities for structured parking. And within that, we've looked at about 1,200 potential new parking spaces. So if you look at these all within together, we're talking about 2,500 to 3,000 parking spaces that are available within a 3 to 4 minute walk of this site that could be developed as needed as the project progresses. With that, I would be welcome to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Phil. Mr. Thompson.
I think parking is going to continue to be an issue for me, especially when you're talking about a 3 to 4 minute walk for a female in heels when it's 110 degrees outside. I don't necessarily think that our employees, our customers, our citizens are going to come to the city and have to have that walk. Now, we have talked about doing some shuttling and so forth. But, you know, for me, giving up on-site parking, you know, we're going to have to continue massaging that and having that discussion to figure out a compromise, because again, 3-4 minute walk doesn't work for me.
Mayor Giles, member of the council, just to kind of follow up on that. We are within this keeping 250 parking spaces that are immediately on site. Certainly we have the ability to do below grade structured parking in the plaza. We've shown in this diagram a potential of 300 spaces. It could be larger than that. It's just that doing below-grade structured parking is one of the more expensive ways to deliver parking. So trying to find opportunities for above-grade structures certainly it helps to manage costs. But.
Great. I notice in the diagrams we are putting pull-in parking spaces around the perimeter of the block. Is that right? So for people who have customer service needs coming to the city of Mesa, they would be pulling up, parking on the curb, walk into the building.
Mayor Giles, that is correct. The intent would be that those 250 parking spaces that we talked about would be for customer and public use, that would really provide convenience parking for people that are coming to the city to take care of business. If there's any type of permitted parking that would be used, say for, you know, ASU students or for other people that would have permitted parking, the assumption is that would be more of structured parking that would be in that 3 to 4 minute walk. But certainly we would want to have convenience parking very close by.
And Mayor and council members, it's not just about replacing the parking that gets taken out. We obviously will generate parking demand as well, and ASU will absolutely be part of the partnership to participate in figuring out parking solutions. Our students are more likely willing to walk a little farther than maybe your customers with got rolls of maps and those kinds of things. So, but we want to work together with you to develop what makes sense for a parking solution, and we have a lot of experience working in even more dense areas in doing so. And generally, our customers are accustomed to paying for their parking. So that would not be out of the question for sure down here.
Most ASU students probably go more than a three-minute walk to get to campus, too. I would think it's fair to say.
Well, I think most students would avoid parking in general just so they don't have to pay for it. But, you know, I think from the city perspective, with the parking around the outside, I guess it's the on-site parking per se, we would really have to find a way that we are enforcing the parking and keep it to a minimal, because we certainly don't want whether they're customers or students or what have you, filling those parking spots and sitting there, you know, for 8 hour a day or what have you.
And Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, from the beginning of the city center design, back when we were doing the design competition, one of the elements that was spelled out in the design documentation was having to find a replacement for 500 on-site parking spaces, because that parking is important not only to our employees but to our customers as well. So I think it would be fair to say that will be a discussion and something that we're going to place a lot of focus on as we would continue this design project forward.
Mr. Thompson.
And I guess one last question. It's the 800-pound gorilla in the room. What is the anticipated cost from your perspective, looking at this, drawing it up, designing it, laying it out? What are you expecting cost to be on this?
Mayor Giles and member council, we're actually working on cost estimates at the moment. I think the intent was that would be information that we'd be bringing to the follow-up meeting.
We are working with ASU, because there will be we have to negotiate the standard of which the level of the building will be. So that's something in probably 2 weeks' time we can give you, maybe a range of the cost per square foot and talk about what we estimate, a first phase would be of square footage that we would do, and kind of do those calculations moving forward.
Great. Other questions for these gentlemen, council? Thank you, Mr. Brady. I know you've mentioned this in talking about both the programs and the buildings, but I know we at the council challenged you at our last meeting last week when we were presented with a challenging situation by both our fire department and our police department, indicating that they had significant needs to meet the growth of our community, and we don't currently have the funding capability to respond to those needs. And we said, Mr. Brady, please come back to us with some ideas as to how we can respond to that. I think find ourselves in that situation again. This is an amazing opportunity. The funding obviously is not currently available. So I would challenge you to please come back to us with some options, whether it's 2 weeks from now, or I think 2 weeks is probably it, isn't it? Because the intergovernmental agreement has to be figured out before the 10th of June. So thank you. We look forward to getting your ideas and getting the numbers at that point. But I hope everyone can see that we've been sharing the information as quickly as it has been available. And so this has been being done in as transparent a way as it possibly can be. And so we'll look forward to it as this progresses, catching up with the math and then figuring out answering those very difficult questions of how we're going to find the resources to move forward on this. Council, any other questions or comments on this item? Thank you very much, gentlemen. Great presentation. The next item on our agenda is a small item. I think it's the budget. Is that right? Item 1C, hear a presentation and provide direction on the summary wrap-up of the fiscal year 2016-17 budget. Candace, welcome. I know you've been busy.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor and Council. Over the last couple of months, we have had a great number of discussions regarding the financial situation here in the city of Mesa, as well as the upcoming budget that we do need to adopt coming into the fiscal year 16-17. Quite a few of those discussions, just a real quick overview or summary of where we've been and where we are. We started with a financial forecast where we kind of went out and did an overview of how we do those forecasting, what we look at, what the trends are that we're seeing, and then kind of gave you a picture of where we thought we saw the city for 16-17. We've had discussions on the proposed budget that has been presented to council. That is the city manager's proposed budget. That acts as the basis for all of the other conversations that we've had. We've also then did an overview of the proposed capital improvement program, and then had the various council priorities come before you, and that included those particular departments who contribute directly to that. That was not an overview of every department within the city. Every department was represented in the proposed budget, and that is in the detail of that report there. So I don't want to, you know, downplay any of the other departments that maybe did not come in front of you, but that all of that information has been disseminated to you. At this point, where we are is really just kind of wrapping up those discussions, talking about where we are and what we heard during those discussions. So we are looking at 16-17. The original intent of 16-17 last year was that this would be the second year of aligning revenues, ongoing revenues with ongoing expenses. We did have some savings that we experienced in fiscal year 14-15 that did allow us for a larger reserve balance than we originally anticipated. While it doesn't contribute to our ongoing revenues, it does give us some time to take a look as we look at the 16-17 budget. So it's kind of a temporary reprieve, if you will. And that's where we started. So based on the discussions that we've had with you, we did come back, or from what we've heard, we have made, we heard four changes to the proposed budget as it was reviewed and discussed. The first one we heard is we heard that there was support to move the, or to expand the light rail bike patrol. This is one that we have current officers right now on the bike patrol, but it was to expand that to be more of a full-time patrol. And that is the addition of six sworn positions. And also, as we were talking with what we're trying to accomplish with that, what we saw was that there was also a need for a park ranger to assist with additional support in the Pioneer Park, which is attached, is on the light rail line as well. The second proposal or change to the proposed budget that we heard was our...
Excuse me, Candace. Mr. Sorry? Thompson has a question.
It's partly my fault for being gone last week and not being in on this discussion, but the bike patrols, adding six more patrols on the bike. You know, looking at some of our times across the valley, response times, calls to service. I think there's, you know, especially in District 5 and 6, our response times are starting to increase. So instead of putting more on the light rail, I would really love to see a few more patrol officers out in districts 5 and 6 to help relieve some of the stress of that area as it's growing.
So, Mayor and Council, I think this is the opportunity. We were kind of throwing what we heard, but certainly, I guess the first point is we're trying to be very careful about how much we add in recurring expenses. But two, certainly, this is the opportunity. We want to get that feedback from Council. And obviously, six officers on patrol can be six officers, and you know, for patrol and new officers. So we can maybe instead of designating it for a specific purpose, we could add six officers, and then at some point, it'll be a while before those officers are on board, and then at some point, we could decide, maybe a discussion about what is the priority of council is addressing response times or other issues.
Perfect. Thank you,
Mr. Cavanaugh, then Mr. Finter.
Thank you. I do support public safety funding. I always have. But I think part of that, the broader discussion, is what we're going to hear coming back in terms of the funding for increased public safety services in general in terms for fire and police. And I think the concerns that Mr. Thompson are raising is very appropriate for the reasons why we're going to need some significant numbers of additional officers. But I truly think the case is made for the additional light rail officers with the expansion of the system that we have. This number that we're talking about today is what was anticipated for us to provide when we opened the light rail segment. Instead, we started with much less. And in understanding how the light rail system works, a highly visible public safety presence is critical along the line, both to maintain safety for passengers and businesses and to alert the bad guys that we're here, that law enforcement is here. So I appreciate this being included in the recommendations. It was one of the top things that were just right on the cusp, I know that you had looked at. So again, I appreciate and hope that it stays in, but we also will need to look at the broader context of what we can do with some hopefully potentially significant increased revenues for the fire and police side, and looking at the numbers and allocations. And the only other comment, I appreciate what you've presented in terms of revisions.
Thank you, Mr. Finner.
So, Councilmember Thompson and I haven't talked. I saw this last night and I was quite surprised. I knew it was in part of the presentation and there's so many needs. And I can't say that I can speak against this particular presentation. I guess what I would look at and say is there are, you know, this 150 square mile city, lots of challenges, response times, minimum staffings that the police department uses. We have, you know, we kind of mid-budget addressed the, you know, the officers on bikes. And I'm told, I was making some late night calls last night, that it's made a significant impact on some of the crime issues. The questions I would ask, and maybe, it, you know, there's another time to get down into the details, is there a way through technology or the municipal security officer or the park ranger, which is kind of a less armed and ready to go type of security measure, where we could save some money and still be able to meet some of these other needs. I'm sorry if I left the impression that, hey, this was the absolute direction that I thought we ought to go, because I think there still should be a little bit more discussion on it. So hearing this council member's concerns kind of added, I thought, well, at least I'm not the only one thinking this. And it was a little bit of a surprise. But speaking a little grander and a little frustration, I shared with the city manager last night, and I'll just say, so I thought we adopted a plan that said, hey, over 2 years, we're going to try and get our spending more in line with the revenues, because we've kind of been doing a little bit of a deficit spending. Wanted to get that closer. So we've kind of done away with these, at least it would seem, the bars, you know, budget adjustment requests that we started with so many years ago and have kind of dissipated. So I would kindly suggest if we're into bars, there's lots of needs and lots of each council member might have. And I was just trying to be a team player here, but as I look through, like, I don't remember anybody ever talking about the park ranger and $102,000 for that one. So I see what feels like some bars that have been put in, and if we're going to do that, I'm ready to go for my budget adjustment requests. And so just a little bit of sarcasm there. But so maybe is there an opportunity? Hopefully staff doesn't go away and say, hey, this is a done deal. This is what we thought you said. Right. I think maybe there's some opportunity to do a little bit more.
No, thank you, Mayor Councilor Fitcher. Thank you for that feedback. And that's really what we want today. This is really meant to be a straw man. Obviously, we've presented to you a proposed budget that didn't include. These are revisions to that. I think the one item on here that doesn't necessarily change funding in the general fund is the
Code compliance,
that was just swapping out, so that's cost neutral to the general fund budget. I think everything else, I think we kind of keyed off what we were hearing during the presentations, and maybe we over responded to that. I will tell you again, you made some very good points, and that's why I hesitate. It's difficult, as we know there's great needs, especially in public safety. I think we're going to try to come back again in 2 weeks to address what that need looks like, and maybe some proposals to address that outside of this budget. But just for an example, we're projected to spend this year almost $11 million more than we're going to receive in resources. The good news is, because we're living off of some savings from the prior year, that helps us. We're proposed in this budget to spend about $7.8 million more than we receive. And then you can tell that we can't burn off that, you know, savings. We're trying to, and you said it very well, Councilman Finter, we're trying to strategically figure out how to get back so we can have current revenues and current expenditures match, and we still have a little ways to go, because obviously what happens is that the savings count keeps getting burned off. So, you know, if there's anything that the council, we defer to the council to set priorities, but we're also trying to be very cautious in reminding us about the fiscal position we're in. I think the proposed budget stretches us a little bit in that manner, but it's something I think we can live with. Maybe these are some matters we can just include further into the public safety larger discussion, if that's what you'd like to do and have that discussion. But this is the purpose of having that feedback. And if the council is uneasy about adding additional dollars into this year's budget, that would be fine. Actually, helps us in the future. But we wanted to defer to council and understand how you want to establish those priorities in this year's budget. So.
I am uneasy about increasing the budget amount for the reasons that we all know, that we are upside down. We're spending more than we're bringing in, thankfully. But this program that we're involved in now where we're doing that, I think is also part of a thoughtful process to get our reserves down to where a more acceptable level. But because of the windfalls of a few years ago, we have the nice problem of having too much in our reserve account. So
too much would probably be an exaggeration.
for
a city, we talk about the 8 to 10%. If I were to go and show you what the city's surrounding us reserves are, it would probably be twice or three times that amount.
Really?
There are cities that are half our size that have our reserves, but we're a big city. We understand we've got to, you know, manage this and try to get with. And the 8 to 10% is well received in the financial world. But it's what we plan for as a minimum. We hope to always be above it when we end the day. And because that's the number we actually want to show the rating agencies. If we show them that we end at 8 to 10%, they get worried because they know that's we're cutting it very thin. So we say that's our goal. We plan for, hopefully, in our conservative estimates, that's where we plan to, but we try to stay always above that. In our forecast, and we try to do that within a period of time, and that's why we talk about, it's not next year, you know, it's the years in the next couple of years where we're concerned about, because when you have an operation of over $1 billion like the city of Mesa, you have 4,000 employees and a multitude of programs, you can't turn on a dime at like a small business with 4 or 5 people and change your expending habits. The process for, and this was one of the most difficult things as a city manager, is laying people off because you don't have revenues, and we don't like to do that. And so we're trying to be very cautious. And yet at the same time, I know there's needs in the budget. Believe me, we know that. And so it's, how do we balance that out going forward? So there's, we're always trying to use this planning material, and we hate being the ones that say no, 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 but we want to make sure we're being prudent in our decision making as we go forward.
Well, if it's your recommendation that our reserves ought to be more than 8 to 10%, then I'd be happy to.
I'm just saying that's our planning purpose, but yeah. Let's don't say it shouldn't be, that's excessive, I guess, if it's above that, because unfortunately the rating agencies would say, let me show you. The cities that have AAA ratings are twice, you know, they could show us a significant amount. And I'm not proposing that we try to plan for that. I'm just saying that's the minimum amount we should plan for.
I'm just thinking we need to look at our voters and our taxpayers and explain to them why we're trying to run lean, but at the same time we have, you know, a healthy bank account.
Yeah.
That there's a financially good reason to do that.
Absolutely.
And it's just that happy medium. How much do we need to keep in there,
right,
so that we're...
And I'll give you an example, Mayor. When... In 2008, when we started going into the recession, right the year before that, we ended up, I think, an ending fund balance probably just over 20%. Thank goodness, because we needed that to carry us through for the next year as we started making changes. And it took us 9 months to, you know, stop things and realign things. So I don't know when the next recession is going to be, but it's going to happen.
Sure.
And so we're just being cautious.
Well, I do understand and appreciate and want to make progress on the problem that regardless of what our reserves ought to be, the idea that we spend more than we take in obviously is not a good idea, and we need to wean ourselves out of that situation. So I endorse the staff's plan to accomplish that. And at the same time, though, the words of the police presentation last week just continue to echo in my ear. We have unfunded, unmet needs in our public safety department. So on this particular item where we're talking about adding some additional police officers, when the police department is telling us we need 94 new police officers now, the idea that we're adding 6 new police officers does not offend me, even though we're in this precarious financial situation. So I endorse the idea of adding these 6 new officers. I do think we ought to prioritize. I would love to have an additional bike patrol. I'd love to have another ranger. I really would. But I'm on board for the six new officers, and I think we then prioritize with the police department where's the most critical place for those police officers to go. Mr. Thompson.
I agree, Mayor, and that's exactly what I was going to say is let's provide the officers, let's provide the bodies, and let the chief decide where best to utilize them. But going back, Chris, I think you're dead on. I think, you know, there's needs and there's wants in our city, and that's why I go back to what we were talking about a month or two ago is you know, I think what we need to do is start sitting down and writing down our wants and prioritizing those and fitting those in where we can, because we do have that limited budget and we don't want to overspend where we're at.
Okay, Candace, we cut you off in the middle of your presentation. I'm
no,
sorry.
This is exactly what this is really less of a presentation and more of a discussion, and that's really the purpose of this morning, is we're really trying to wrap up. Well, we know we do have some other outstanding items like the public safety needs that we know we're not going to be able to address in the 16-17 budget. At the same time, we need to wrap up the 16-17 budget as we do have statutory requirements. We do have adoption policies that we want to make sure that we hit. And so the purpose of this morning is really to get that feedback from the council and direction on what you would like us to include in that adoption of the 16-17 budget. We all know that during the year, as if things come up, things can be prioritized. Police officers can be moved based on where the chief thinks that they need to go and so forth. But we still need that direction from you to whether include them or not include them when we're adopting that 16-17 budget. So if I hear this morning, we are going to include an additional six sworn positions to the 16-17 budget, but not designate them for bike patrol at this time. And this will be in addition. I want to make sure.
Asking a question.
Yes, yeah, I get that. That's
a question.
Yes. Let me ask a question to answer your question.
Okay.
Are we proposing any other new police officers?
Yes, we do have six sworn positions in our crisis response team that was in the original proposed budget. That would bring it to a total of 12 sworn positions.
Yeah, so that's a really good point that we want to make, that it's for the first proposed budget, the original proposed that I brought to council, we did add six for the crisis response team. Now, if it's council's preference, we could certainly treat those maybe like we're proposing here. So instead of designate them for a specific purpose, we could say for a total of 12 in the budget or keep it at six, and then we work with the chief. And I think it makes sense because we're going to bring this unfunded met needs discussion too, and it would probably be good for council then to weigh in on kind of the priorities of where are the priorities of need and public safety going first.
Mr. Cavanaugh.
I'm going to respectfully disagree. I think as a council, we have talked about the needs of priorities for the crisis response unit. We have talked about the needs for increased security along light rail. And I think there's significant support for both of those identified areas. And if we just say these are undesignated positions, again, we're kind of creating a vacuum. And so these are critical needs that have been discussed within the police department, within the council, within public safety, and looking in terms of our needs for to address mental health conditions within a community, as well as transit services needs. And so, again, I think the staff has done the correct thing in listening to present these as additional officers in these areas, which we know have needs. But we also know there's a larger discussion in terms of adequate resources of personnel for both our fire and police that is going to be part of the continuing discussion for our future budgets. But we are working right now and trying to finalize this budget. So I want to be clear that my support for what we're doing here is really predicated on providing policy direction in these two areas.
And my understanding is that the six officers for the critical response, I'm not hearing that we're suggesting that they be designated in a different area. I think that was the police department's recommendation, is that we need these officers in this area. And that's what I want to have happen, is for the police department to say, here's where we need the police officers. Here, we're hiring them for this specific purpose. And if the next six officers that they need are bike patrol officers, hallelujah, please use them such. But I just don't know. I know that was, as Mr. Cavanaugh said, that was one of the top, closest to the line unfunded items.
From the police department.
Yes, from the police department. That's why I won't be surprised at all if Chief Mesa says, yeah, the next priority I have for the next six officers will be to beef up the light rail patrol. I don't know if that's what he's going to say or not. Mr. Kaplan.
Well, it's interesting. I was asking those questions at 9:30, 10 o'clock last night, and I pulled up the presentation, and maybe they weren't in priority order, but one of them was the community action team. Was a big request, $1.5 million. And just to add a little perspective and not trying to be abrasive at all, is so remind me, last year the police department cut 26 positions. These were sworn officer positions. Is that right?
23.
Thank you. 23. So that was just the loss from last year. And so we've had, you know, two of these more specialized programs coming forth, you know, with the 12 officers. And again, you know, we don't have the benefit of looking at what maybe additional resources or something for the future. So it's hard to take this budget debate or discussion at this point. The only counter I would give to my wonderful friend Vice Mayor is when you say, hey, bike officers, which we did take three patrol officers off and put into the bike unit, and understandably so, there was an increase in some crime, and I've heard that it's had an impact and been very positive. But it really takes a smaller segment of the city to address. You know, we've already addressed it with the minimal beginning portion. Now we're going to build it to a bigger portion. And it sounds parochial, but as we look at this larger city and lots of needs and geographic spread out areas, I think there's some really good arguments can be made to the other. So I just kindly would suggest it feels like we're taking that very limited resource and focusing it in a very tight area. And maybe that is what the police department says. But I did see the other asks on their original presentation from our early study session. And there were others. And give you an example without going too long here. The community action officers, we had tremendous success doing Operation Pipeline. And those guys went in, did 124 arrests on the East Main portion from about Higley to Power, had huge crime problems, businesses fleeing the area, and used those community action officers to, working with the county prosecutor, the city prosecutor, others, great program, made a huge impact on crime. Doesn't look like, at least on this budget request, that would make it there. So there are some great arguments, probably just as passionate as the vice mayor makes on some other, you know, resources throughout the city. So as kindly as I can put that out, that's why I'm mentioning some of this. So.
Okay, yes, Mr. Luna.
My preference is that we continue with the six specialized officers that were already proposed in the budget, but I also agree that the six could be undesignated. If the chief decides maybe they need to be on the light rail path, then that's the appropriate place. But I think that the chief can make that decision.
Okay. I think I've heard four people express a similar sentiment, if that is useful to you.
I don't think it changes the number.
It does not change the number.
Well, I think it does add.
Well, it does change the number.
Not from this presentation. It adds the six additional on top of the six.
Oh, correct. I'm just from a budgetary.
From the budgetary perspective, the number that would change would be the equipment that would be needed. These are bike patrols, so if we put them on
Tahoe's
patrol, we would need to buy some additional vehicles. There'd be some one-time costs associated with aligning these somewhere else other than the light rail.
Tahoes are more expensive than
bikes.
Right.
So,
but we'll give ourselves the flexibility at a future time to make that decision.
Right.
And speaking as long as it's on the screen here, the park ranger, I would love to see us get into the park ranger. I know I've attended some events at Pioneer Park, and there's a crowd there that needs a park ranger. But I also know that we're on the verge of putting a chain link fence around Pioneer Park for several months as we make renovations to it. So I think it's not necessarily that. I want the new park ranger, but I can see that we might need them a year from now more than.
So maybe
right now.
Bring that back after we've completed the improvements at the park.
That's what I think, but I defer to the parks people. And
we just know the experience has been with the police officers are very effective. Sometimes that those individuals who need some oversight end up in our parks, and so that's why we had suggested that. But that, but I think your point's well taken, Mayor, and we can make that, we can bring that back at a later time.
Okay. Thank you. Are we ready to move on?
Okay. Thank you.
And I guess, Mayor, Council's seeing the next proposals. Right. Again, it just raises the question. I heard the Councilman Finter is, there's just a few items left there, and that the question is, you know, what's the council's preference? Do we move forward with those programs? That's really what we're asking.
Sure. So specifically, we're talking about the contract employee on historic services, correct?
Yes.
Correct. That's just having temporary services available for needs as they arise during the year. The original request was $50,000 from the department. The proposed budget had $15,000. If the council is giving us feedback, you'd like to see the full 50, then we would put the full 50 in.
My understanding, this is not we are going to spend $50,000. We're saying we have up to $50,000 that the contract employee can come in and, depending on the need, spend up to that amount. I support
correct.
This proposal. We haven't had this position for years, and it's created a real backlog in our city for these types of projects. So, and it's not enough, I think, that is really going to be a blip on our budget. So personally, I support this idea. Anybody else want to express any? Okay.
All right, we'll move forward with that.
And then the final item that we had heard during some of the discussions was changing in the human services funding that had come up a couple of times. The existing funding right now, if we raised it up an additional $50,000, then it would move it to $876,000. That is for services and the administrative oversight. We still are continuing the $50,000 in our utility assistance program that we started just recently. So
Thank
this was
you.
A request to increase the amount by $50,000, and we weren't sure if we heard full support for that or not.
Thank you. I support this increase. Mr. Finter.
I support the increase. I have a beef about how this is happening. It feels like we're good Mesa, which, and we really appreciate all the human services funding that's provided. It feels like we're picking up the slack for some other folks in administration fees. And so... Anyway.
You're saying we should have had this discussion when Mayor
thank you. I wasn't going to say it, but...
I'm not going to say that either. That's what I was asking you, if that's what you were trying to say.
I'm a short timer.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Let the record reflect that Mr. Finter said that. Thank you. Other direction that you're...
So that's those were the four items that we heard during the various discussions. There were some other items that may have been mentioned individually, but if we would like to discuss any of those, or if there's any additional feedback that you have for us as we kind of compile this all up for adoption, we'd like to know that this morning.
Candace is telling you, her staff needs to know.
Yes, we would like to know.
So they can assemble the budget they bring back to council for adoption.
Yes, Mr. Cavanaugh.
Thank you again. I appreciate the responsiveness in terms of the discussions we've had previously. I'm supportive of what we are talking about here in terms of the numbers. I still personally think we need to look at the resources we're allocating for code compliance as well as animal control. I do think those need some additional supplementation, and I know that manager and his staff are looking at those issues. I know one of the items for discussion that we had received from the Arizona Museum of Natural History Foundation was the request that the city pick up the cost of their volunteer coordinator through general fund money so that they could focus their fundraising on capital and exhibits and things like that, since it's difficult to get donors to give you money to pay for people. And I know that Dr. Wilson has been doing an amazing job at the museum. The revenues are significantly up, and I appreciate the fact that he is looking at this as in terms of how to manage his own budget. And I just wanted to give a shout out to the responsiveness of staff to look at this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Those are both great, both issues that deserve some additional discussion. I remain firmly confused as to whether I want additional code compliance officers or if I endorse the idea that if we do the blight abatement program, that will reduce the need for code compliance officers. I've heard people whose opinions I respect voice different opinions on that. So I just don't know. I do think we would benefit from more code compliance officers, but I also am really excited about the idea of coming in with a very robust program to address blight. So I'm kind of inclined to split the baby a little bit and maybe hire one new code compliance officer, because I think the amount of money we're talking about targeting to this area is about $500,000 more. Yeah. And so that's great, but that's, I don't know if some of that money could be spent on an additional code compliance officer, and we again just try to find the sweet spot between enforcement and rehabilitation.
Yeah, so what we did was we moved the funding that we had for officers in CDBG and moved it to the outreach component. I don't know what the council's preference is, if you want to keep one of those funded from CDBG and then it doesn't have an impact, or what's the thought?
Yeah, I think we got it right. When we ran it through committee, the issue I've had with code officers and CDBG all along was that it kind of puts you in that box and you're not able to deploy those officers in other places of the city. When you look at that heat map, if you were to overlay that map that we looked at on Monday with CDBG, it doesn't correlate that closely. I mean, there are significant areas outside of that. And one of the things that we envisioned with this new program is that we would be able to take all 9 code officers into an area at once and really blanket it and take care of those issues, and then follow that up with that outreach piece. And so my concern about having this balance between number of code officers and the outreach is that you'll be able to do enforcement and the outreach will never be able to catch up or keep up. And so you nailed it, Mayor, that having that balance is the important thing. So, given all the budgetary pressures to that we have right now, I think leaving it as it is for now, and give it a year, and if it doesn't work out, then next year let's revisit it, or you guys could revisit it, because I'll be long gone. But I hear all the little pieces, and they're all important, and I commend my colleagues for their engagement at looking at all that stuff. And, we've made decisions on this council over the last year that have increased budgetary pressures, like, purchasing additional properties that we have to maintain and other projects that we have going forward, so we can't do it all. We just can't. And it's going to be we have to make sure that we're carefully weighing all of these proposals against what we've already committed to in the past. We have parks programs we're continuing, so adding, I would love to add $50,000 more to the Human Services Fund. I think that's a great idea. I mean, we have so much need in our community, but can we really do that this year? If we want more police officers on the street, which would we rather have? And again, that's outreach versus enforcement. So I'm not sure what the right balance is, but Mr. Brady, you're the one that tasked with presenting a balanced budget.
Yeah.
And we like to throw our pet projects and proposals and I didn't mean to say pet projects.
Yeah,
that's not the right word.
Very legit. I think every project
for any
has,
of that
yeah, absolutely.
Is a pet project. I misspoke, but we all have our priorities, and it's a tough job you have to balance all of those priorities. But for me, I think I'd err on, maybe not this year. Let's play it out another year, just because of so many things that we put in motion over the last year, as far as parks programs and property acquisitions and other and ASU coming up. I mean, we really, I think, need to be careful.
I've resolved my confusion on it. People are the most expensive thing that we do, and if we hire an additional code compliance officer and we hire a new pension, we hire all the costs associated with that person. Then I think let's wait and see if what the sweet spot is after this year, and maybe add more code compliance officers next year. It would be my personal thought, Mr. Thompson.
And I agree. I had the privilege, but I was able to see a presentation earlier this week on this program called OpenGov. And it really takes what we're actually looking at right now and puts it into a format that is easier for staff to pull up and easier for us to view. And I would like if Mr. Brady would be able to maybe look at that and have staff run through that and get your thoughts on it and see if that's something that you think we could utilize to increase the efficiency and transparency in what we do.
Yes, I know it's a product that the staff's been looking at, and it's just, again, it's I think it's something we want. It's we got put it on our needs list and balance it out. But I think there's a desire to get to a point to get that. We just have to, it's again, prioritization, but I think it is something we're very interested in. So Mayor and Council, I hate to ask the hard questions, but I guess that's what I get to do. So way I understand is we'll continue with everything that we've shown you in the presentation today. We will, the patrol officer, we'll have a sworn officers as opposed to designate them specifically for light rail. At some point, the chief can come back and talk to us a little bit about addressing all these issues that he has in front of him, whether it's downtown and light rail or response times. We'll keep the co-compliance, the presentation we've made a couple times, we'll keep that as it is now. Come back in a short period, you know, in a year's period of time and talk about the effectiveness of the outreach and versus the enforcement. I guess the question is, there's been some other ideas that have been presented today. I just need to know whether anything above and beyond in this presentation, is there additional support to add more than what we see here? I think we've mentioned, Vice Mayor Kavanaugh mentioned a few, but I don't know if there's any interest in going beyond what's on the presentation here.
The only thing that I think we haven't expressed an opinion on is the volunteer coordinator at the museum. I'm supportive of, I've talked with the members of the foundation. I know they're anxious to do that, but I'm not convinced that that Tom feels that's the biggest priority on his list. So that's why I am have gotten to sit on the fence on that idea.
We are looking at, he's done a remarkable job. Tom Wilson is one of our just outstanding department directors, and what he does over with the resources he has is amazing. I think one place we could look at is because of additional revenues as a result of activity there, we could possibly look at that as an opportunity to fund it maybe this year, and then maybe looking into the next years, maybe that's something we can bring back to council. I know other museums and our performing, you know, arts groups have that. I've also thought maybe we need to kind of look how we coordinate all the volunteers, because we have a lot of volunteer coordinators out there. I know there's specific assignments they have within those areas, but maybe there's something we can do a bit more efficiently. So my proposal right now to move forward addressing the foundation is just looking at these additional revenues that are coming in as a result of the increased activity at the museum. So it doesn't impact the general fund this year, but maybe that's something we continue to look at as an opportunity in the future.
That makes sense. I think some of the volunteer organizations are larger than others, so I'm not sure that we need five different volunteer coordinators for five different organizations.
We need to look at that.
Okay. Thank you. So I think that was a real ambiguous answer to that question. Does that satisfy Mr. Kavanaugh on... I'm sure it doesn't satisfy you. But I think going forward, we'll look seriously at that, and if it's a pronounced need, then we'll be quick to fund it.
Okay.
Council, other... was that ambiguous enough, Mr. Finter?
Well, next year, I'm going to bring my list, except I won't be here.
Okay, thank you. Candace, do you have anything else?
I do not. Just we have the summary. We'll be back with you on June 6th. Will be the tentative adoption of the budget. That'll be the next time we come back.
Thank you. We do have one request to speak on this, and I'm anxious to hear from Ron Peters. Ron, would you come up and good to have you here. We're looking forward to hearing what you have to share with us about budget priorities.
Mr. Mayor, Ron Peters, 1711 East Brown Road. I've been a Mesa resident for 26 years. Mayor, I'm here again to pick on you about historic preservation like I did when you were a young councilman.
I remember.
And I requested that we pay attention to our historic resources in this community. I'm here to request that you reconsider funding the colonnade removal program, the test program that we presented that Jeff McVeigh gave you a great presentation on for our downtown. And I'm really excited about, you know, talking to you about this, because a lot of the things that were brought up today fit right into what we're doing here. And this is commercial strengthening of our downtown, our original downtown commercial core between Robeson and Center. And we owe it to a lot of these businesses to help them to become successful for the future that you're trying to build for them with ASU and what's going on down here. I was encouraged by ASU gentleman when he spoke about building a visible architecture that you can see into the building. Removing of the colonnade will build a visible architecture for us to see into these retail centers. And I believe that with what investment that you've made in the downtown, the Performing Arts Center, the Benedictine University, the repurchasing of the Brown & Brown Chevrolet parking structure that we made a great deal with them many years ago when I was on the Downtown Vision Committee. So a lot of the things that are going on in the downtown, the light rail has made an amazing difference. And we put it down Main Street for a purpose. We put it down there for a purpose to enhance the businesses. And we've got to move forward with this process of enhancing those businesses, because what they will do is if we make those businesses successful, they will have sales increases. They will pay back the investment that the city is going to make. So this is an economic development process that we're looking at. The test project that we did in the 90s, where we removed the colonnade in front of the three businesses on the north side of Main Street. The one business there, Dixon's Jewelers, when the colonnade was removed, the next year he had a 25% increase in sales. So that was a definite positive thing. We're not asking you to fund the complete removal of all of it. Okay, we know that needs to be over a process, and we think that businesses will do that on their own once they see our success and what we're doing. But I think with the DMA making a contribution of money to this process, the Arizona Preservation Foundation is interested, and the Mesa Preservation Foundation, which is I'm really here representing, are interested in helping to make this move forward and be a success for the city. You talk about policing. We have dark downtown right now under those colonnades. If we open up and remove those colonnades, the police department works on a program developed by SEPTAB, which is community policing through environmental design, and they recommend that we don't create dark places in front of businesses. And if we can make it so that we have one police officer can ride down that one side of the street and look across and see everything on the other side, he can't do that today, because those are really dark, dingy areas under those colonnades. We would help ourselves in policing. So all of this, I think, leads to making a better downtown for Mesa, and we would encourage the city. And I know you got a big fiduciary responsibility, a lot going on your table, but you know every one of you made that decision to take on that responsibility. You're here because you want to be, okay? So, I mean, I don't have any pity for you. You've got to make it work. Sorry. You asked for it. You've got it. But, there is a lot in this community that has helped. And this city has done a wonderful job, in my opinion, in what you've done for this community. And you have community groups like the Mesa Preservation Foundation that are really interested in our downtown and what we have and in enriching it. We made a commitment to this community when we saved the diving lady. That was $125,000 this community gave to an icon that is nationally recognized. You talk about economic development, you talk about East Valley Partnership saying they want you to do this. This community did it for you with the diving lady, okay? And that didn't really cost the city a whole lot of money at all. We got your support, which was what is important. That's what we want for our downtown. We want your support. And I think the rest of it will be developed by the community.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
I agree with everything you've said. And if there were pet projects, this would be mine. I strongly support the removal of the colonnade. So this didn't, I think, Jeff, the idea from Mr. McVeigh was a $90,000 proposal that was matching funds for owners to remove the colonnade. The city owns the colonnade.
It's your property.
It's our property, right? Yes. So, but it would be, business owners would say, yes, please remove the colonnade, and yes, I'm going to replace it with something, and here's my proposal to do that. And that ended up on the cutting room floor of our budget this year. Is that right?
And Mayor, to also, originally our proposal was $90,000. Since then, the Downtown Mesa Association Board has voted to donate $15,000 to the program. So at this point, it'd be around $75,000 request.
Okay. Well, I have a feeling that I'll say I'm a yes on that, and I might hear cricket noises, but if we're up to me, yes, I would put $75,000 into the budget for the colonnade removal.
Mr. Mayor, you know, make the community a challenge if you have to do that. If you want us to do matching funds, then have the city come out and say, we'll throw in this amount of money if the community comes forward with this amount of money. You know, we want this to happen because this is important to downtown. You've spent a tremendous amount of money in the downtown. You know, and we don't need to stop. And we're not asking for the $500,000 to remove it all. We're just saying give us a little bit so we can get everybody excited about doing this on their own so that we can create this impetus to move forward. That's what we're trying to do.
So, Mayor, maybe the challenge is this. I'll just throw this out. Because I think maybe this is the part that gets a little more challenging. And I know it can be done successfully this way, but maybe the compromise is if a business comes forward to us with a plan to do their improvements to their facade as they would like to do, and they don't want to have that, what do we call them?
Colonnade.
Colonnade in the front. We'll remove our colonnade.
Yeah.
But they have to have the plan to do their facade improvements. I mean, we would be responsible. You know, if someone came to us and said, I'm willing to invest in my business and I want to do something different in the front, then we would be willing to remove the colonnade.
That's a policy statement that we can say if we own the colonnade and if you ask us to take it down, we'll take it down. Right. Now, obviously, there's cost related to that.
Right. But this program went beyond just us removing it. It was also helping to fund or finance the actual improvements. I'm just trying to find it.
If I might, I mean, this is a comment card, not a agendized discussion item. Just to remind everyone.
No, I understand
and if,
that.
And if we're going to have this discussion, you can tie it into the budget. So, I mean, it's kind of...
Exactly.
But if we're going to talk about policy about colonnade removal, this which is a little bit of a different animal, I think we probably should entertain that conversation on a more holistic, like in a community and cultural affairs. I'm happy to host that in my committee, and we can talk about that or economic development or any of the other committees and then kind of work through a process. Because it sounds like we have to develop a policy of giving permission to remove it first. I don't know that we have a policy to remove that yet. And then... You know, not that I'm opposed to it. I think that'll be a very easy discussion to have, but then fold it into what you're talking about. I like your idea about the facade, so.
Thank you. So going back to the discussion about the budget, I do support adding money to the budget for the removal of the colonnade. Maybe if 90,000, like we're down to 85 now, 75 now. So I would ask for whether or not there's council support. I love the idea of having an overall policy, not above and beyond the pilot program that's being suggested here, that if anybody on Main Street says, hey, take your ugly colonnade down in front of my store, that we'd respond to that and be cooperative in doing that. So I agree and would like to see additional policy discussion about that. But at the same time, relevant to this discussion, I endorse spending $75,000 on the colonnade proposal that
Mr. Keep in mind, Mr. Mayor, that the business owners paid for that colonnade. That was one of the things that we had a problem with when we did the experiment before. We had a hard time getting business owners to agree to remove it because they were still paying on it in the 90s. They hadn't paid it off. So now it's paid off. Okay. Every one of them was assessed. That was a property assessment to pay for the colonnade.
Okay, anyone else want to do this, Mr. Fenton?
Yeah, so in the budget, you have a contingency. I don't know if we assign a specific percentage or number to it. If we follow through with Councilmember Richens, let's do a little... Because I thought the price tag to remove that was like $450,000.
Right, that's why this was a pilot.
The whole thing
this was smaller. This was only for a few of those. So let's do that. Let's just go through the committee. You know, we'll obviously... it may be much different once it comes out of policy and what the policy process may be. If the council is interested in going back to this facade program where we actually help and assist with the financing, the actual facade on the building, or do we reserve and say what we'll do is just the colonnade itself? So we can have that discussion and bring back a cost estimate to the council.
Okay. So I think that's a definite maybe, Ron.
It's better than when I walked in here, sir.
It was. Thank you for coming and reminding us of this important issue. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Council, Mr. Brady, any other discussion on the budget?
I hope not. I think we're done.
Okay. Thank you. The next
Candace,
item on our agenda.
Needed? Did you get everything you needed?
I did. Okay. I got the directions.
Candace saw the calendar, and we'll be coming back on the calendar.
Yeah, we'll be coming back in two parts. May 16th, we'll be coming back with everything except the actual final budget. That'll be your capital improvement, your utility rates, everything we've already discussed. And then on June 6th will be the actual adoption of the tentative budget. It's not as glamorous as this conversation this morning. It's the financial side of it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next item on our agenda is information pertaining to job order contracting projects. Council, any questions regarding those items? Hearing none, next item is to hear reports on meetings or conferences attended. What have you been doing this
week? No, actually, recovery.
Okay.
I will say that I did watch study session last Thursday, so
okay.
It's kind of lightning on the whole.
Did you stay awake through the whole thing?
I tried. Okay. I really tried to. But it was a challenge. No, I just want to announce that I have a lunar landing this Saturday.
Oh.
So right. You're invited to have some free breakfast over at Falcon Field Terminal. It starts at 7:30 this Saturday.
Great. Good to have you back again.
Thank you.
If hearing nothing else, next item is scheduling of meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Councilman Luna announced his Luna landing, and the other information we need to know is that next Thursday we'll have a study session, May 12th at 7:30 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If there's nothing else, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn. Thank you. All in favor, please say aye. Aye. We are adjourned.